Once again, another government report, and once again, the victims are women. Released in the last few minutes, as Brian said there, we know them generally as the Women of Honour. It was a report by an independent review group, and it was looking at female veterans in the army. They raised very serious matters, and as I think the Commander-in-Chief, leader of the Defence Forces, Sean Clancy, has already said, it's going to make for stark and difficult reading, and it does. There's a statutory inquiry effectively recommended. That was there a misuse of the disciplinary process, access to promotion or to courses as a form of retaliation or to deter complaints? That's a question. The inquiry should also investigate whether there have been issues raised in the investigation of complaints concerning health and safety issues in the Air Corps in relation to the maintenance and use of hazardous chemicals and the investigation of air accidents. The issue of the use of hazardous chemicals, those allegations have been around for a number of years now in relation to the Air Corps that are going to be investigated. The report also called for the appointment on a non-statutory basis of an external expert or group who would report to the Minister for Defence on the process of medical boarding and the process of downgrading members on foot of injury or illness in service. They should also, which is very worrying, the group should look at a study or conduct a study into deaths by suicide of former members of the Defence Forces. The report found that a consistent and embedded theme is that some members of the Defence Forces management abuse their positions of power and command in their treatment of subordinates. Now, as far as I know, don't say whether that's gender specific or not. And another aspect of the control of reporting complaints is the counterclaim where the complainant is threatened with being charged with fabricated charges in an attempt to persuade them to drop the charges. And the review, as you know, is led by a judge, and it recommends introducing measures to address the abuse of power. The report says, and I'm reading this from the Irish Times, the report also said the different sources available to the group conclude that at best the Defence Forces barely tolerates women. Listen to that again. Different sources available to the group conclude that at best the Defence Forces barely tolerates women, and at its worst, verbally, physically, sexually and psychologically abuses women in its ranks. I'll read that again because it's so stark. The report also said that different sources available to the group, this was led by a judge, conclude that at best the Defence Forces barely tolerates women, and at worst, and its worst, verbally, physically, sexually and psychologically abuses women in its ranks. This will have serious repercussions, not just, I think, for the army, in fairness, but to any of the organisations which were primarily male-dominated up to the relatively recent past in this misogynistic society that was dominant in the country, where women, and we spoke about it at length in this programme, where women in the public service, for example, had to leave the day they got married, believe it or not, But in institutions and organisations that were predominantly male up to the relatively recent past, how have they dealt with women in the service, be it Gardaí, be it the prison service, be it the fire service or ambulance service or whatever, because the review group, and this is the beginning of the process now. The beginning of the process was the women coming forward, and the beginning of the process was Katie Hannon's incredible documentary, radio documentary, about the women who came forward, the Women of Honour. The report also said that different sources available to the group conclude that at best the Defence Forces barely tolerates women, and at its worst, verbally, physically, sexually and psychologically abuses women in its ranks. That is pretty horrific, and we'll have reaction from one of the women hopefully by 2 o'clock or 2:30. But that report is just out in the last few minutes, and that's going to dominate the news agenda now for foreseeable future. But once again, the victims in this case are women, be it the cervical smear scandal, be the the bloods, the blood scandal going back years. Once again, it's women who are the victims of this. First, I want to go to Minister for Defence and Tánaiste Micheál Martin and the review into gender-based violence, harassment and bullying in the Defence Forces.
The decision today to publish, and what I'm basically saying, there could be no more hiding of any of this. That's the first step in the revitalisation of our Defence Forces. And I think we have to look radically at command and control. We have to look radically at training, how the training systems operate. And in terms of how women are treated, and particularly all of these issues that were covered by the report. But fundamentally, all of those, everything has to be examined now to ensure that those who, and the people we met yesterday said, look, we're very committed to the work we do. We like and we're loyal to the Defence Forces. And yet they almost articulated the personal dilemma they are facing themselves, some of whom have experienced bad behaviour, to put it mildly, yet retain this admirable commitment to public service and to the nation. I owe to them, and we owe to them, to make sure that this is a turning point in terms of how issues such as this are dealt with now and into the future.
The point I was trying to make, is that the perpetrators of this bad behaviour continue to serve in the Defence Force as we speak in this very moment. Those perpetrators will receive this report in the same way. You have to understand that
it's going to create attention and culture, attention working. It's inevitable given the data. Journalists are putting excerpts from the report to the Tánaiste, and obviously you got a sense there of the starkness of what's been revealed in that review into gender-based violence, harassment and bullying.
I mean, the report, two things about this. The report dealt confidentially with many people who came forward to the group and gave their personal experiences, and then also raised a concern which was established last year by Minister Coveney. A lot of people went to that service. I met with them myself, and they gave me a summary of the personal experiences that they had encountered, and also crucially how the complaint system didn't respond, and how the whole human resource environment is very poor, and how interpersonal relationships are not managed properly, and how complaints are not dealt with properly. So this has to be a systemic response, a culture change. We would encourage people to report any individual cases to the Gardaí. I think fundamentally, and that is how we can deal with perpetrators.
We leave it at that for the time being. We'll come back to it later on. Okay, let me go to Shane O'Foulou, who's contacted us. Shane, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened? This was at the weekend.
It seems like a bad dream still.
Okay.
I went to a local play centre. I don't know whether I should mention the name or not. With my two of my children, one is six and one is four. Mm-hmm. The four-year-old was invited to a birthday party from the playgroup.
Okay.
And so we went in, and we were approached, and one of the staff said that my girl, who's six, would not be allowed to enter, that it was breaking a policy. The policy they have is that... Mm-hmm. Children who have to be under the height of 4 foot and 5 inches, or else eight and under. And although she's only six, she was maybe an inch or two above the line. There is an actual line on the wall.
Okay.
She had to stand beside us. And so she was taller than this line, and she wasn't allowed into... She was allowed into the play centre, but she wasn't allowed into the play area, into the play frame area. And, I mean, as you can imagine, she was gutted. She was crying. She was saying, please, Daddy, and I asked the staff to reconsider. I said, look, she's only six. She's only in senior infants. She's very tall for her age. She's got a medical condition which makes her taller. And she's not going to hurt anyone. Can she please not go on, even if it's only on this one occasion or at a birthday party? And they said, no, we're really sorry, but this is This is company policy.
Okay, I have a statement from the play centre, which I'll read out in a minute. But apologies, Shane, but that was happening live. Now, Shane, just to recap for people, you went to a play centre on Sunday. Where was the play centre again, Shane?
It's called Funky Monkeys in the Clare Hill Shopping Centre in the Malahide Road.
In Dublin there, yeah, okay. And they have a sign up, which a lot of, if not all the play centres have, there's an age restriction and a height restriction. And even though your daughter is 2 years under the age restriction, she exceeded the height restriction. You're not questioning the measurement process or...
Not at all. No, I mean, okay. If it's 4 foot 5 inches, I'm not going to take out her measuring tape.
Yeah,
I believe it's 4 foot 5 inches.
Okay.
Unfairness, Joe, yeah. And the pain to see your daughter crying and your daughter telling you that it's unfair and that she doesn't like being tall as a result, that she asked me, could we try and go out again and could she walk in again and sort of stoop down so that you wouldn't look as tall. Mm. And I was going, you should always, don't, like, you are who you are, be yourself. Never. But then we got colouring pages from the staff, and so she was colouring away, and I was trying to make it as normal as possible, yeah. Trying to stay as, I was heartbroken, but tried to stay as calm as I could. I was furious, but I tried to stay as calm as I could, and just to make it as normal for her as possible. And then she said that, she just came out with, I think I'll write to Santa Claus, and, you know, maybe he'd have a magic wand or something that could make me smaller so that I could go to birthday parties. And that just nearly ended me, Joe.
It's heartbreaking. Now, she has what is known as Marfan syndrome. Will you explain that to us, Jim?
Yeah. So Marfan syndrome, it's a connective tissue disorder. So it's basically the building blocks for most of our body and the organs and our bones and everything else. So that's why she's so much taller. I have it myself. I'm 6'6". Ava wears clothes for 9, 10-year-olds.
Okay.
So she is very tall for her age, but she wouldn't be strong. And she certainly wouldn't be a danger to anybody else. And the other thing that really galled me, and even my daughter could see it, was that the age restriction policy was not enforced. There were at least 3 or 4 other children who were above the age of 8 that were happily playing away. There was one girl that must have been 11 or 12. She was playing no problem. I'm a teacher. There was a boy in my class there. He'd be 10 in June. He was playing the same class, same school as my daughter, and she was able to say to me, but this boy's name, he's 4 classes older than me. Like, yeah. Ava's in senior infants, and this boy's in 3rd class. Like, how was he able to go in and I'm not? And I had no answer for her.
Well, did they get in, the example you mentioned there, did they get in because they were under the height bar?
They must have been.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether they were asked about their age or not. I asked the manager, and she said that they're very strict on the height. And I asked if they were as strict on the age.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't very committal on that one. And when I pointed out that there were other children or teenagers there, she was... Yeah, very non-committal, very evasive in her answer, and saying that
the difference, of course, is that height is measurable. Yes. The age of somebody right. Can be difficult to determine just by looking at them, especially at that age. By the way, when they said we are really strict on the height proviso, did they say that was because of they might hit their head because of a certain low? You know, we often see getting on a roller coaster or whatever, there's restrictions.
Yeah.
But did they say the reason why they are very strict on the height restriction?
They said it was company policy, and it was based on, by they blamed the insurance company. So, I mean, I'm sure it is policy. I pointed out that the policy was age and height, and one was being policed very vigorously and one was not, you know. And if a 6-year-old can spot that the unfairness of it all, you know, like she came away from there, and I mean, the phrase body shame springs to mind, but like she was embarrassed, and she was hurt by.
Has it happened before, but, Shane?
You know, nothing I can do as a dad. I had to sit there or stand there and watch this happen and have my heart break into pieces for her, and I could not protect her. And I implored, could you not just make an exception this one time? We'll never come back. No, yeah. It's policy.
And has this height issue, given that she's so tall for her age because of Marfan syndrome, has it impacted before?
Never.
Okay.
There's another play centre half a mile away that we go to regularly, particularly on wet mornings, because she has to go for, she's physically not very strong, and she goes for physio and stuff as well. And yeah, we're encouraged to go to play centres. We go to another one, you know, particularly on wet, we could go there maybe once a fortnight. And she plays away happily, can do all the different activities, and loves it. Just to see your six-year-old running around carefree, yeah, laughing and having fun, you know, is brilliant. But
okay,
people are in front of you crying this, and asking you, like, Dad, this isn't fair. How come? And you, there's no answer. There's no answer to it.
Well, is Marfan syndrome regarded as a threat health-wise that has to be dealt with?
Is it a threat for people with it, John?
Yes.
Standing you correctly.
Yeah.
It can have very life-threatening issues.
Yeah.
It affects all organs of the body, but primarily the heart, eyes,
okay,
the spine, scoliosis and that, teeth and that. But like my own dad died in 1976 at the age of 27,
okay,
because of an undiagnosed heart problem. Because of that, I suppose I was treated and monitored all the way through my childhood, through my teenage years, through my young adult years. And at 27, same age as my dad, I had the operation. Now, I had a 99% success rate because it was elective and I had been monitored. My poor dad.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's important for people to know that they have it. Petronella County. Petronella, good afternoon.
Hi there.
When were you diagnosed with Marfan syndrome?
Well, I wasn't actually. It breaks my heart to hear about it. Hi, Shane. It brings back memories of me being small and different and skinny and tall. I would have always been standing out like that too, different and taller than all the other children. I wasn't actually diagnosed until I was 21. But I would have been that awkward child, taller than everybody else and seen as different. So I can feel it. I'm 52 years of age now, so it's a long time ago, but it brings back a lot of memories of being a little girl and being different.
And Petronella, when were you diagnosed with Marfan syndrome?
Yeah, I was my mum would have told you that she always knew something was wrong. I was always very, very skinny, clumsy, tall, had an awful lot of joint pains that a child shouldn't have. So I was considered having eating disorders and growing pains, and I went through all that. But it wasn't until I was 21 that actually a doctor who had trained in America saw me in A&E for yet another joint problem, and he picked up on it. And yeah, that was the first I heard of it. So, yeah.
And before then, because you say you were 21, then, Petronella, when you were having joint problems and what was the phrase? You were clumsy.
Yeah.
And you thought you were, people thought you were too skinny. What did people think it was?
It was me. I was not eating enough, and I was looking for attention, and it was growing pains, and I must have an overprotective mother who, you know, pushing, that there's something wrong with her daughter. And I spent a couple of weeks in the orthopedic hospital when it was the old orthopedic hospital. And they ran tests and they did x-rays and they sent me home and they said to my mum and dad, she's only making it up, take her home. And I was 11 at the time. And my mum said that, like, a child doesn't make things up like that. You know, you just don't. So by the time I was 21, I was a very traumatized person. I didn't believe it myself. I've always said if that doctor had said, you've got Marfan syndrome, but you've only got 5 days to live, I would still have been delighted because at least somebody had told me it wasn't in my head, and I did have something seriously wrong. Yeah, it is a relief to get a label. Some people don't like the idea of being labelled, but when you've been through what I was through as a youngster, getting told what was wrong was...
And did you have incidents like Ava, Shane's daughter, has endured? Did you have those instances where you were too...
Yeah.
Your height denied you access or set you apart?
I mean, it's brought back a memory of being at a birthday party. I haven't thought of it for years. And I was sitting down and whatever way I moved, I dislocated my knee. And dislocations would be a big problem at Martin syndrome. And it was the first time I'd done it, and I was so terrified to say anything. I already have been a very shy, nervous child because of what I'd been through, and I just didn't say anything. And it was actually the adults, I felt, made it worse, because I was seen as, oh, she's just looking for attention. She's just being one of those kids that doesn't want to partake with anybody else. She's looking for attention. And it was the adults' reaction that was nearly worse than children, who you would think adults would behave differently. But yeah, I think that was more traumatic than having children tease. It's when the adults do it.
Yeah. Do you recall, Petronella, what would the adults say to you?
Well, I mean, I was seen as looking for attention. Oh, here she is looking for attention again.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, my knee was dislocated. I couldn't exactly move, but yeah, it was, it's funny. Things have changed a lot, but obviously not enough. When you hear about what Shane and his daughter went through, that you'd think adults would be sensible and would, you know better. But yeah.
Shane mentioned that his father died from it as a result of complications from it. It was undiagnosed. Did you inherit it from your parents?
Yeah, we're thinking I inherited it from my mom's side of the family.
Okay.
Again, nobody has ever been tested because it was too late. It's kind of a historic thing, but I know there was a lot of tall people on my mom's side of the family. My grandfather, who I never knew, died from a heart problem, but it was so long ago, we don't know what it was.
Okay.
But more than likely, it was Marfan again. So I'm lucky. My biggest problem would be joint pain. I suffer 24/7 with chronic joint pain. But my heart is relatively okay. It's monitored, but it's relatively okay.
And is after the diagnosis, is that the main protocol, that you're monitored rather than...
Yeah, absolutely. It's the first thing, if we ever meet anybody who's just been diagnosed, it's the first thing we say to people: make sure you get your heart checked, make sure you get an echo done every year, because Marfan can affect your quality of life, but the heart condition is the thing that you can die from. So you do need to keep that monitored. That is the number one killer with Marfan syndrome, basically. But it's come a long way. When I was first diagnosed at 21, we basically went to the Cork Library, and there was a little piece in a book, and I know other people from Marfan syndrome Support Club Ireland will remember it. There's a tiny 5-line piece in the dictionary saying that lifespan was something like 30 years or something, and it was a very bleak description. Not the best thing to read when you've just heard about it, but it has improved a lot since, because of monitoring and, of course, because of medical progression. Things are a lot better now, but it still is a life-threatening disorder that you need to monitor and be aware of.
And Shane, say with us, Petronella. Shane, when you were a young man, obviously you were tall beyond your years, as your daughter is now. How did it impact you? Well, or is it easier for young men?
Oh, I don't think it's easy for anybody, Joe.
I meant easier.
I understand. No, I'm sorry. I understand. I'm not being flippant.
No.
I mean, I was monitored all the way through. I always knew. I mean, we went for our annual heart and eye checkups and that. And I was attending Crumlin. So at about the age of 10, the cardiologist said, look, you know, there's a bit of an aneurysm there, so you'd be better off kind of avoiding strenuous activities, you know, contact sports. Now, I look, like most 10-year-old boys, loved football, but wasn't very good. Like Petronella described there, being awkward, I was awkward, not great coordination. But I loved football. I loved playing with my friends in school or the lads on the road or that. But thankfully, the cardiologist had the sense to say, look, 10, like he's in 4th or 5th class. Sure, look, leave him be while he's in primary school, and then maybe when he makes the move to secondary, maybe just sit out the PE things and drop off any football teams. And just that bit of cough on, you know, was helpful. But, you know, growing up with teenagers, you don't want to feel different as a teenager. And I'd hope to be able to shield my daughter from that until she was older, until she was 10 or 12 or 15. At 6 years of age, for her to realise that he was different, and that children who were older than her would be allowed to play and that she wouldn't, is just so grossly unfair. I don't have words to describe it, really.
Well, basically, the statement from the Play Centre tells us that we're aware of their call from us and they are looking into it. So, it doesn't say much, but have they spoken to you since?
We sent him an email yesterday morning. I got an email from them today and a missed call. I'm a teacher, so I can't say.
Okay.
I don't have time. I don't have a minute to take these type of calls normally. Another colleague of mine is taking my class at the moment. But I'd like to say, Joe, if you don't mind, hope this call, it might prevent other children. It's too late for my daughter, but I'd hope that, be it Funky Monkeys in Clare Hall or other play centres or other groups who are organising activities for children, would just be mindful that these are children. They want to have fun. Look, we all understand the importance of rules and, you know, you need structures. I understand there's insurance regulations and that. But they're children and they should not be made to feel different or inferior or have less rights than other children.
Yeah, of course. Unless it turns out that there is a safety issue, but... Anyway, we're trying to find out, as you are, Shane. Margaret, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Your son and your husband have Marfan's.
They both have Marfan's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's it like for them to live with that?
Well, you know, we've had one disaster after another, but we're very positive. You know, my husband had open heart surgery when he was 36. And with that Marfan syndrome, and then now my son, unfortunately, will have to have the same thing this year. You know.
And in terms of activity, what age is your son to begin with?
He's 22 now.
Okay, and activities are things that he was
He had no contact sport.
Wow.
He wasn't allowed any contact sport.
Why?
It was very difficult because if you got a belt to the chest.
Of course. Okay.
You know all that kind of thing. He got his eyes done with Professor O'Keefe.
Okay.
And he was a new boy out of it. You know, he went from plus 36 to 20/20 vision. You know, it's a miracle, you know. There's lots of things that can be done.
And what age was your son when he was diagnosed with it?
Very young. Because my husband had it.
Yeah.
I had to ask about it when he was born, you know. Mm-hmm. But it did take a little bit longer for them to find it.
Okay.
But they did find it before he was 3 months old.
So therefore he was monitored.
And now he has to have open heart surgery, unfortunately, this year.
Oh, has he? Okay.
Quite urgent. Yeah.
Your husband, do you know when he was diagnosed?
He was diagnosed when he was young, right?
Okay.
Like, as a matter of fact, you have Marfan's. And that was the end of it. He was plunked with a pair of glasses on his face and told to go on with his life. You know, and he played football and nothing happened to him. But as the years went on, when I met my husband and he told me he had Marfan's, and the internet had only come out, you know, and I had to ask a friend to look it up for me because we had no computer at that time. And she wouldn't send me the details because it was terrible, terrible news, you know. So she wouldn't post. She had to post it to me, and she wouldn't post it, and that made it even worse. So then she eventually did. I'm sure. Oh my God, it was dreadful, dreadful news. But I said, look, just get a doctor and then be referred, and he did that. And I said that was the worst scenario. I said, and of course he was the worst scenario, and he was done through the public hospital very, very fast.
Right.
Got open heart surgery. Jonathan was 3 months old when he had surgery, you know, when my husband had surgery. So it was really a start of a marriage with a lot of complications.
And
but
Does every child get a chain? Do you know? Does every child in the family, if one of the parents? No, okay.
They're reckoning no. About 50%, Joe.
50%, okay.
It depends. Yeah. It's 50-50, it doesn't matter. Family. Yeah, boy or girl.
Okay, Margaret, what are you saying? It depends, yeah?
Yeah, it's 50-50. It's boy or girl. You can't take an egg, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
It's a mutation, you know? It can actually happen without having Marfan syndrome in the family.
Okay.
As
okay.
well, you know, okay. it's actually a mutation.
Yeah.
But my husband's, some of his sisters have Marfans, and some of their children have, and some others haven't. It's a hit or miss, you know?
Yeah. And so if your son went on to have children, if that's
he could carry it.
Yeah, okay.
He could carry it.
Okay.
You know?
But the fact that you know that it's in the family means that, please God, if a child arrived into the world, then that's the first thing you'd probably start looking for.
Exactly. It's not a mystery, and as the years went on, the doctors, you know, you met more younger doctors that knew what I was talking about.
Okay.
And Petra, you know, but it was a fight.
Petronella, have many people have the syndrome, Lauren? Do you know?
I don't know. Yeah, it's more than is diagnosed because it gets overlooked a lot, but okay. It is still quite a rare disorder. But like a lot of youngsters who will be very tall and very thin and hypermobile, the chances that they could have it, you know, but it tends to be only if there are problems caused by it that it tends to get diagnosed. And once it's diagnosed, the next generation are kind of okay. Do you know what I mean? They know what to look for, but it's that first generation to get diagnosed. Sadly, it's often only diagnosed if somebody dies from the aortic aneurysm, and then they look into what happened. So it's that getting that diagnosis, and then the next few generations will be fine because they'll be looked after. Do you know? They'll be monitored and seen. Okay.
Is there anything?
Can I jump there, please?
Shane, yes, sorry, yes. Yep.
Just,
yes,
just to add, I'm involved with the Marfan Syndrome Support Group.
Oh, great, okay.
We have a Facebook page, Twitter page and a website, but we have an awareness month in February, and just, it's one of the facts we put out there for it, is that they reckon internationally about 1 in 5,000 people have Marfans. So that would mean in Ireland, that the island of Ireland would be about 1,200 people with Marfans. Yeah. But worse, that about 50%, about 600 people in Ireland have Marfans and have no idea. Yeah. And they could literally be walking around with a time bomb in their chest.
Good point.
And unfortunately, some of them, as Petronella mentioned there, it's when the aneurysm ruptures, when that bomb goes off, it's too late. And then family is tested. So I beseech anyone, beg anyone out there who thinks that maybe they know somebody, a colleague, a neighbour, someone on a football team, basketball team, anybody that you think you might know that may possibly have this, to go to a doctor and to ask about being screened, because you literally could be saving someone's life.
Okay.
I just say that you don't have to be thin and long and tall,
because
both my husband and son are not. They're tall, but they're not thin,
you know?
They look quite normal, if you want to put an awful statement. You know, they look like everybody else. You know, sometimes you have a gaunt look. You know, you have long face, long hands. You know, their bones are very long. Their fingers can be very long. Their back can be curved. You know, there's absolutely loads of things comes out of this Marfan syndrome.
Okay,
you know,
but as the three of you are saying, it's really important to be conscious of it and get
absolutely.
Tested. Okay, Petronella County, Shane O'Fowlu, Gudamil Morgan and Ava and Margaret, thanks indeed. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 text. Joe at RT.ie, Dermot McGlinchey. Dermot, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Good afternoon to you.
What's happened?
Yeah, we've been having a problem in Shannon, as you've probably seen from my email.
Yeah,
a lot of antisocial behaviour now from a group of young teens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and their age groups are between 12 up to 16. Since they've opened a new Shannon Town Park, it's a beautiful park and a fantastic facility for everybody. But this group of teens that don't live anywhere near the park have decided now to terrorise some of the people that, that live right beside the park.
And what does this terrorising consist of?
Well, the latest incident happened on Sunday night. I mean, one of them ran up, kicked the main door in the entrance lobby on Block L in Brunasjona, smashing the door, and our apartment next door to it, kicking one of the windows in on that. You know, and Catherine, my partner, was there, terrified when they were doing this, you know.
And how many in this gang, Dermot?
Well, there's about between 15 and 25 normally. And as I say, they don't come from... This is a beautiful estate. There was no problem until basically this antisocial behaviour kicked off, you know. And it's been going on now a few years.
And have other people complained, you know, Dermot? Or other people...
Yeah, just to give you an idea, Joe. It's, okay. Blocks of apartments is about six blocks, three blocks around the park, the outer perimeter of the park, Block K, Block L, and Block A. But most of them would be Eastern European people, and they don't tend to, you know, they prefer not to have the hassle with police, etc., you know.
Most of the residents are...
Yeah, okay, there's a lot of, there is a number of owners like ourselves and other people. And
Is it a private complex?
Yeah, they're all private, privately owned apartments, but people rent them, obviously.
Of course,
you know, And
because I was reading a series of calls we were getting a few weeks ago from Ballymun, where there's a block of private owned apartments there near the Axis Theatre. And they were having the exact same problem, but what they were saying was, one, the door is controlled by a buzzer. I don't know whether it's your door controlled by a fob or whatever.
They are, Joe, and also a keypad to enter.
But they still get in, don't they?
Oh, they do. They know the codes from probably, some of them have classmates that live there, and they tell them the codes so they can come and visit them. But one incident, Joe, that sticks out probably more than most. There's four stories in these. There's lifts going up. You can take a shopping trolley into the lift. And some of the older people on the top floors, obviously, would take a shopping trolley up.
Of course.
And somebody would bring it back down and leave it in the lobby. And usually duns or we'd get young lads of a Saturday to come around and collect the trolleys. There's nothing. I understand some of the people, they use them to sort of rest when they're walking, you know. It's probably a comfort to them. It makes them more stable when they're walking, some of the older people. But some of these kids got in one night and actually threw a trolley from the fourth floor down into the lobby. And they thought that was funny.
They could have killed somebody.
Exactly. If somebody came in there just as they threw it.
The other thing I recall from the Ballymun call, it was again a private complex, they were saying when they get access to the lobby, and I don't know what way the system, postal system is in your complex, but they said in the lobby, like in many private apartment complexes, there's a whole set of post boxes for each, obviously, for each apartment mark.
Exactly.
And they were saying they were being vandalised and items stolen from it. Does that happen in your place?
No, we're not at that level, Joe. What I'm on now is to try and make parents aware of what's going on, you know, parents of these children, you know, and anybody else out there, Joe, that's listening, that knows the names of some of these, they could pass them over to the guards in Shannon.
And what when you phone the guards, what happens?
The Garda barracks is right behind the park. You can walk from the Garda reception into the park within 2 minutes.
Okay.
Now, we go to the Garda barracks, make a complaint, and they say, we'll send a car. But a car arrives 10 or 15 minutes later, and it's absolutely useless. There's no point, you know? So most of the time, people don't even bother because they say, what's the point of phoning the guards? you know.
And do these gang, this gang of 25, do they talk? Do they shout? Do they?
Oh yeah, very abusive, Joe. You know, and I hate to say this, but there's not one of those children is what we would term, say, foreign nationals, because these Eastern European people do not allow their children out, you know, during the, especially in the wintertime, up till 9:30 and 10 o'clock at night. They're all Irish kids.
And when you say that, and I know you're explaining it. Do they issue anti-Irish threats or expletives?
No, they do. They're becoming very racist.
Sorry, anti-immigrant. Sorry,
anti-immigrant. The Ukrainian, you know, F off back to Ukraine and all this. And Catherine is French, and they call her a packy C word.
Oh my God.
I mean, you know, and I'm not being disrespectful to Pakistani people. I really find that offensive myself, that term, you know.
Yeah, of course,
everyone
does.
Yeah, is there
a residence group, a neighbourhood watch?
And we've tried, Joe, we've tried neighbourhood watch, but a lot of these people work shifts. A lot of them probably don't speak very good English.
Okay.
And they don't. You know, and it's, you know, I'm not disparaging these people in any way, because I can understand the angle they come from, you know. And they only rent you, so they think, look, I mightn't be here in 6 months' time.
Okay.
Now, and it's also, some of the blocks don't get touched because they're not in that vicinity of the park.
I take that point. And the behavior, what are they doing when they're in the park? What is the anti, are they lighting fires or drinking or?
No, there is a bit of drinking by the older teens. Now, I will say this about the older teens. Personally, we've had no problem with the older teens. You know, they tend to be more with their friends, and they're meeting inside what we call the bandstand. It's a covered area in the center of the park, and you know, with our climate in Ireland, it's a place for them to meet every evening, and they don't seem to cause the same problems the young ones do.
Okay.
No, and as I say, I'm appealing to the parents. If any of them are listening out there, where are your children at night time?
Yeah.
You know, please, it's a fabulous place to live, Joe. I absolutely love the place. You know, and it's right beside Shannon Airport. Within 5 minutes, you're in the airport. And we've got beautiful estuary, beautiful park and what, you know.
Is there CCTV?
Yeah, this is a problem, Joe. In the management company now got in a group to put in these cameras, and unfortunately, the software hasn't been working correctly.
Okay.
Now, my partner is now on to the board, you know, the management company itself, but they represent the residents.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pushing them hard now to get a new, a new take on these cameras.
And what about lighting? That's always an issue as well.
No. Okay, yeah. This is the thing, Joe. The main park, the lighting is first class.
Okay.
And I give great credit to the county council, also, you know, the Shannon Town Council, because the park is a wonderful place. You know, there was everything put in there. You know, it really is. But why is this gang of scumbags, sorry, Joe, I'm getting a bit angry now, and the more I think of them, why are they allowed to roam like this? You know, I don't know if you've seen that video I'd sent to your producer there, but...
No, I haven't, no.
Yeah, you imagine a full-size door, Joe, the entrance. Yeah. Oh, no. And they kicked that door on the bottom until they actually... The door didn't break down, you know, it's sort of, safety glass. So it didn't...
Shatter, yeah.
Shatter, you know, and... but... That door must cost at least 500 or 600 euros to replace.
Yeah, of course. At least.
Just for one window in the apartment now, and this is the second time it's happened, they broke a bigger one, which cost nearly 300 euros the last time. When they kicked that 153 euros now to replace this window, insurance doesn't cover it. nor does the management company. So this is out of our pockets. You know, so...
Okay, and where, how long have you lived there, do you mind me asking you, Dermot?
Six years.
And where were you living before that?
Living in Limerick. But
in other words, did you ever have problems like this before?
No, never seen this before. Okay. You know.
Okay.
And, you know, I spent a bit of time in the Canary Islands, and to be honest, this type of behaviour would be absolutely unheard of, you know? I'm not talking about big tourist areas.
This is not to dilute, because it's an awe, especially that language you're using towards women. But
at night time, so older people used to love going walking around the outer edges of the park, and now they can't do it because they congregate in groups by benches where it's not so well lit.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Now, I'm a big guy, even though I'm 71, believe me, I'm very fit. I'm quite content to walk around there, you know. And
somebody,
they don't challenge me because they know, if they try me, there's going to be at least two or three of them coming with me, you know.
Well, funnily enough, Dermot, someone's after texting in to say, Dermot sounds exactly like Liam Neeson.
If they know anybody who wants a sound like a Liam Neeson, I'm available, Joe. You can let them know that.
Now, you're from what part of, and he's, by the way, he's the exact same age as you are. And
is he?
And what part of the country were you born in? Where's that accent?
Derry City, Joe.
Okay, and Liam Neeson was born in Ballymena.
Ballymena, yeah, I was there. I actually met him once, you know.
How did you? Okay, but was the similarity of voices?
There'd be a lot of us would sound like this, Joe.
You could, Dermot, you could make a good living with your voice.
Well,
it's a beautiful voice.
I've done my time, Joe, you know.
Okay, Dermot, thanks for highlighting this.
It's a pleasure, Joe. I just hope that some of the parents will, and I know they're not, look, Joe, we all know they're in a funny time, you know. I don't want the teenage tantrums of somebody else's kids, you know. We've done all this ourselves, but we don't want somebody else's teens tantrums, you know.
Okay. Well said. And somebody, if not all of that behaviour, is totally unacceptable. Dermot McGlinchey in Shannagorum, Míle Maga. Thanks, Dermot. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, Jack. Jack, good afternoon.
Joe.
What happened, Jack?
I have an electric car, a small one.
Okay.
And my son got it for me. It's a 2012 car. It's a Peugeot.
Okay.
And the lead I'm looking for, or the charger, is the one there's associated with the original Mitsubishis, but the ESP would have had some of these. And what happened was, I left the door of the car inadvertently open. I don't know what day this could have happened, because we didn't use the car for over a week or so.
You left the door unlocked.
Unlocked.
Yeah,
slightly the back door.
Yeah,
and I left the charger on the back seat and never thought of it.
Okay.
I went out yesterday to charge the car, and the thing was after being stolen off the back seat. Now, what I thought was ironic is, I'm a disabled man of 84, and some fellas come along and disabled the car as well, as myself being disabled. I don't know what we're coming to. So that's basically what I wanted to highlight.
Is it a very unusual lead cable?
It's probably the same cable would be used with the Nissan Leaf, the original Nissan Leafs, and the ESP would have had these under the name of IMEV, IMIEV, and they're coming from the original Mitsubishi.
Okay, because there is a generic charger now. You're saying it's not a generic one. It's not one that will fit every car.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you plug it in at home, do you plug it in inside the house in a 3-pin plug, or you have a special thing on the wall outside?
We have a special thing on the wall outside.
Ah, so you have the system. Yeah. What you need now is the lead. And the car, again, is a Peugeot Ion.
Yeah.
What year is on it again?
2012,
so it's 10 years old.
Yeah,
So you're ahead of your time.
Yeah, well, my son would be kind of into that. He imported it some years ago, and I got disabled through my back and everything. And this car it doesn't have a long range. The reason he was ahead of it is because seemingly these cars were on the continent a while, and they were starting to trade them in to get ones with longer range, you know.
And
he picked up this. Yeah.
And how do you use it in your day-to-day life? Do you travel far, Jack?
Oh, I don't. Okay. I only travel around the city and to get groceries and pick up something. But the fact is, outside the door now, could be up to 10 days. I don't know the last day. The door is left slightly open, and the faker came and we only noticed yesterday we searched it. It's gone. My wife and I, it was left on the back seat. Sometimes we'd come in.
I know. Of course. And Jack, it's not the cable that could be used in other cars. So I presume whoever robbed it said, "Oh, I'll sell that for 20 quid or whatever." And then he or she realised it was it wouldn't fit every car, and then they probably threw it in a bin or a bush or a skip or something.
But it's called a granny cable now, and anyone is here to fit a few cars now, you know what I mean? To fit the Nissan Leaf, Nissan Leafs, and it's the original. But the ESP would have had these iMeV, which is more or less another name for Mitsubishi. And they would have had them in their cars.
So we're looking for someone who has that type of charger and is not using it anymore.
Well, they could be, the car might have crashed, they might have been.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah. And it's the outside one I'm only looking for. The outside, I wouldn't be going to the chargers in town or anything because I wouldn't be able to hang around, you know.
Yeah, and
I only barely use it to go for messages.
Yeah, well, but it's still a lifeline for you.
It's a lifeline for myself and my wife, you know. Yeah.
And Jack, does the car run on petrol as well?
No, totally.
Oh, it's
electric.
Totally. So it's completely immobilized.
Completely immobilized.
Oh, that's a pity. Oh, that's a terrible pity.
I think if the fella, you see, there's actually a disabled badge on the front of it as well. Whether
it be, I think if he saw that, he might have had a qualm of conscience, or maybe he wouldn't. Of course, Kieran
Sherry has contacted us. Kieran, good afternoon. Afternoon, Joe. How are you?
You're listening to Jack. And
just caught it by accident there. I have to say my heart goes out to him. I'm in that game, Joe. I fit car chargers around the country.
Oh, okay.
So I will go to that man's house and supply him whatever he needs. And I think we would also like to supply him with a home charger that will future-proof his next car.
Oh, I know what you mean, that no matter. And did you hear the description of the car that Jack has? It seems unusual. Peugeot Ion from 2012, Kieran. Go ahead, yeah?
Sorry, there's a time lag there. So the original car, were very few available in Ireland originally. So there was the Peugeot Ion Mitsubishi MIEV, as he called it there. And there was the original Nissan Leaf.
Okay.
So we can supply the original cable for those. I'm definitely sure I have one somewhere.
Brilliant, Kieran. That's brilliant. That's good news, Jack.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much.
And Kieran said,
"I appreciate that from that man."
Kieran Sherry is his name. We'll drink to that. And Kieran said, "When he gets to your house, he'll have a look at your charger to make sure that if you do update your car, you'll be able to use the system as well." Kieran, are you busy? Are you? Your company is called Volkswagen. Very smart.
Yeah,
smart. Very smart. Are you busy?
Yes, flat out. So I started this business back in 2016-17, and we've noticed that every year that goes by, it's like a doubling on the year before.
Wow.
So originally, when we started first there was like maybe, you know, maybe less than 200 chargers being fitted in Ireland. I mean, I'm sure that's happening every day now rather than every year.
Yeah, and are you nationwide?
Yeah, well, yes. Traditionally, we kind of, most of the business was in Dublin, Meath, Kildare, Wicklow, because that's where the population lived.
Okay.
But I started the business in the west of Ireland, but I found in the last couple of years that there's been a huge uptick in electric car sales in the west because cars themselves have really got legs, if you like. The manufacturers are building fantastic cars nowadays.
They really are. And what's the most popular one at the minute? Do you know, Ciarán, from your work, what's the most popular electric car?
Well, traditionally, there was only ever a few models available. So yeah. Nissan were the ones that led the market.
In fairness, yeah.
Yeah.
With the Nissan Leaf.
Correct,
But every one of them now. I saw
everyone
this.
Everyone else now is following it.
I saw this new Volkswagen on the road yesterday, 231 Reg. The Volkswagen ID Buzz. Have you seen that? It's based on the old. Remember the old Volkswagen?
I do.
The hippie van. Remember the hippie van they used to call it. But it looks fantastic. But and it's all electric. But I'd say it's pricey. But anyway, so Jack. Oh, by the way, Ciarán, why are these cables being stolen? Are they any value in themselves? For copper,
the person that stole that was just an opportunist. There's a limit. Jack said it there himself. I mean, there aren't many of his cars on the road, so it was an opportunist, that person.
Okay. So Jack, you'd be back on the road, Jack. Hopefully, before you have to collect your pension or whatever next week, Ciarán, with your permission, we'll pass on your details to Ciarán. And what part of the country are you in, Jack?
I'm in Waterford.
Okay. We'll Ciarán, there's a challenge for you now, Ciarán. But we'll sort it out either through the post or whatever. But it sounds like you know exactly what he needs.
And, I think if he sent us what we need, we'd be grand.
You know? Okay. We'll exchange your details after the programme. Jack, mind yourself. Whoever robbed that, hopefully somebody will spot it. But anyway, in the meantime, Ciarán's going to get one to you. And Ciarán Cherry, safe travelling. That's Ciarán Cherry. By the way, Ciarán, you called your company Volts, as in VOLTS.
Yeah.
Wagon. Did Volkswagen come after you? No.
Of course it did. Yeah. So basically, I bought the domain in 2016, I think it was.
Good man.
Then I applied for my trademark in 2017 successfully, and then in 2018 we started receiving letters from Wolfsburg in Germany. So that's been ongoing for the last 5 or 6 years now. But their website is there, Volkswagen.ie.
And what are they saying to you from Wolfsburg, which is a city in itself, the headquarters of VW? What are they saying? Desist.
They're saying you're a scoundrel, Joe. They're saying you're how dare you be a thief.
It's a deception. And who came up? Not at all. Who came up with the name?
It was a joke when I was a kid going to school. What kind of car should an electrician drive?
Okay.
A Volkswagen.
Brilliant. Well done. Well done, and when you Google it, I presume your name will come up. Volkswagen haven't knocked you off the web or anything. They're big enough, and they're good company. They're big enough now to let you go with that very witty name, Volkswagen Company, and they install car chargers. Obviously, the clue is in the name. Thanks indeed, Ciarán. Thanks indeed, Jack. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, a reminder that this Friday, this week being the 170th birthday of Van Gogh, this emerged from our bizarre tangent in our conversation with Mike Murphy last week. And Mike Murphy mentioned that he'd been to the Van Gogh exhibition in Artane in Dublin, which is going on, and he said it was absolutely incredible, completely surprised him. And then it was pointed out that Van Gogh is probably the world's best-known painter, and could we do an homage to him in Liveline style, which means lighter, I think, And that will be this Friday. So if you have any connection, there are a number of songs dedicated to him. We'll be either performing or playing them, from Starry Starry Night to a Bob Dylan song. And there's a number of others as well. By the way, if you think you can sing one of the Van Gogh songs, and or your class can sing it, also we will hopefully have a painter here talking about how, because that's what we want to do as well, encourage people to buy a set of paints, be it watercolours, acrylics or oils or gouache, and get interested. And well, Nicole Hennehoff is there. Nicole, good afternoon.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Joe.
Because,
how are you?
Because when we were talking to Mike last week, you rang in. You love, is it Van Gogh, Van Gogh, or Van whatever you have in yourself?
Right. Well, here we'll show now the right way or the correct way to actually say it, right?
Okay.
So I would have always said Van Gogh, and when I talk about him, that's probably what I'm going to be calling him. But when I did a little bit of research around it, so the Americans call it Van Gogh.
Okay, that's right, because in the Bob Dylan song, he uses the word Van Gogh, but that's I thought he was using that pronunciation for the rhyming possibilities. Okay.
Yeah. The British call him Van Gogh.
Van Gogh, yeah.
But
and
the Dutch,
yes,
right?
Yes.
The Dutch elongate the van, and it's Van,
Van,
right?
Yeah, okay.
And the second name isn't Goff or Go.
Okay.
It's actually Hawk.
Ah, Van Hawk. Okay.
Yeah, so it's Van Hawk. Now, I won't be referring to him as that when I'm talking to you, because it's too hard to remember.
And,
but that's the correct way.
Okay, and remember, I'm thinking Van, well, as in Ivan, is a name in Ireland, as a Christian name. And Goff is a very common name. I just wonder, is there anyone in Ireland called Ivan Goff who has had it shortened to, like, Van Morrison to Van Goff? We'll hopefully hear from that. Why do you love him? Why do you love him?
I just love his colour palette. I mean, you know, I suppose the sunflowers are the oranges and the yellows, and, you know, the Starry Night are the navies and the whites and the greens, with the sparkles of yellow. And yeah, I just think he's got very beautiful colour palettes.
And do you think most homes have a print or a card or something, a Van Gogh painting, wouldn't they? He is without a doubt the most popular and populist painter.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I have, I remember years ago you could order a canvas and somebody would paint it for you in whatever, like, yeah, whatever style you wanted. And I remember picking irises from Van Gogh.
Okay.
not Van Hawk. But, yeah, so I remember getting that, and I have that hanging in my house.
And
just because it's beautiful.
And where is the house? Where are you living?
Ask me where. Oh, I live in County Clare.
Oh, you live in County Clare, okay. And where are you originally from?
I'm from County Clare, but my husband was Dutch.
Ah, so that's where the hen and Pfaff.
Yeah.
And did you come and live in Ireland? I know there's, unfortunately, there is a sad story I'm now reading about your husband.
Yeah. No, he came to live in Ireland. He fell in love with me and came to live in Ireland.
Okay.
And we were in the middle of our happily ever after, but unfortunately it wasn't to turn out that way.
And what age was it when he passed?
47.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And there is creativity in the family. You say your son is a filmmaker.
My son, my pride and joy, is my
Brilliant.
Filmmaker.
And what's his name?
Stephen Hall.
Okay. And you say he's a new feature film called The Gates, and that's
The Gates.
And
yeah,
that's going to be
premiered at Cork Film Festival last month. No, sorry, not last month, in November.
Okay. Did you see it?
I did, and I'm not a horror fan, but this was out of this world.
Wow.
Made in Ireland, in Cork City Jail.
Okay, now what, yeah?
In the most freezing of months last February 2022.
Yeah.
And then finished it in January 2022, and finished it in February in Bunratty Folk Park, where they took down all the Irish signs and put up all the old King's Head and all of these English signs with all Irish crew and everything. It was amazing.
Okay. And it stars John Rhys-Davies, written by Tim Reynolds, and has the wonderful Peter Coonan, we all know from Love, Hate, and lots more besides, a great actor. Mm-hmm. He was also in, sorry, I have to update yourself, Joe. Peter Coonan, Peter Coonan was brilliant in Bad Sisters, which was fantastic as well. Eve Hewson and Sharon and the whole crew were incredible. David
and
Pierce
Richard Brown Brake.
Richard Brake, it was great, and
Brian and
Matthew O'Brien, Claire Hoy, and that's nice creativity. And when did your husband at any stage, given his background, is Avan Hawk as big in? I presume he's loved in his own country.
Oh, he absolutely is. Sure. Okay. And now I haven't got to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, but we've been to the Rijksmuseum, and literally for 17 minutes on a plane ride back, myself and my little girl Jennifer. And we literally flew around the Rijksmuseum and saw the self-portraits, because believe it or believe it not, Van Gogh in his day was like the selfie king.
Yeah, of course, first selfie.
Because he would you know, he painted so many paintings of himself.
That's right, as he painted a number of sunflowers.
Yeah.
But this is an
900 paintings he actually turned out, but only sold one.
Yeah, and now his, I think, one version of his, painted by him, he did a number of sunflowers. One of them fetched the highest amount ever paid for a painting. This is a man who only sold one painting in his lifetime. But anyway, you have a suggestion for Friday. How do we make a 75-minute program out of just because it's his 170th birthday? Obviously, he's dead. No relations. Mm-hmm. How do what's your idea, Nico? Now, it's radio, remember?
Yeah. Okay. So I believe that there's a painting in absolutely everyone.
Yeah, here, here.
Okay? Yeah. And I believe no matter how bad you think you are, once you have blobs even on paper, say you could pick from the Van Gogh colour palette, so the blues, the greys, and the navies, the white, the yellow, the other one, whichever suits your home. Just even if you're to do blobs and frame it, it's going to look spectacular when it's up on the wall.
So you want people during Friday's program to paint using if they have paints, all the better. If they have crayons, if they have colored pencils, pens, anything, and submit it to us. Tweet it on Friday. Tweet it before at Joe Liveline or at RTE Liveline. Okay, but
keep it for yourself and enjoy.
Yeah, of course.
And I get notelets printed and send them to my friends.
Great idea. and you won't be sued because Van Gogh is out of copyright, so we can do what we like.
Oh,
it's absolutely fantastic. And also, we're told there is a connection between Starry, Starry Night, not the song, but the actual painting, and Air Ross in Boar Castle. Who had a telescope there long before Don McLean ever wrote Starry, Starry Night, but it may have, there's a thesis somewhere that it had an influence on Van Gogh's paintings, Van Gogh's painting. Okay, Nicole Hennehoff, go to Mila Margot, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.